Welcome. We are delighted to present to you a set of conversations with the pollsters who give lots of insights into what the Europeans of the different generations, different segments of the societies think about politics, what drives them to lending their support in the elections, what politics should all be about in the future. Welcome to this new episode of FABS Talks. It's a part of a very special series where we have a privilege and pleasure to host the members of the Next Left Progressive Pollsters Network, who are people with absolutely exciting insights into what the European public thinks, might possibly think, what we should expect as the big social issues, and how to understand reality around us to be able not only to persevere in that, but also perhaps to be as audacious as to change the course of the things to come. Now, with me, a very special guest in our studio, Bruno Jambard, Vice President of Opinion Way, coming from France. So I'm already having a lot of appetite for the questions that will be both European and French politics oriented. I think French politics is a little bit like football. Everybody has an opinion about that, inside or outside of the country. My name is Anja Skrzypek. I'm Director for Research and Training at FABS, and it will be my privilege to host this debate. Now, Bruno, thanks very much for coming. I think let's start with the following teaser. In your research, you spent quite a lot of time looking at the emotional aspects of politics. I mean, of course, we are speaking to everybody from Brussels. Mechanics are important, but we always talk about the competition based on possibility of gearing emotions. So what are the emotions today? Is it fear? Is it hope? Where are we with the European societies?
Well, when we look at the emotions, clearly it's much more negative emotions than positive emotions. What we saw in our last survey with this question, we asked people to rank from on a scale from 0 to 10 on different emotions, how they felt about politics today. And clearly they feel much more anger, for example, than hope. We have in many countries, except in the Netherlands, where we measured last time these things, where you have a majority of the people who are feeling anger against politics. And hope is only ranked around 4 points in average, which means that it's like if only 35-40% of the people were feeling hope about politics. And that's a big issue, especially for the progressive, because the narrative of progressive has always been to put the thing much more on hope than on anger. Of course, the anger field is the populist area. It means that you have to change the mood of the people about politics if you want also, when you're a progressive party, when you want to push progressive politics, if you want to be more heard by the voters today.
What are the people then angry about? I mean, if this is the connection that is missing, is there a misconception about anger? Because, you know, a lot of people speak about there's already a label. Angry white men, right? Almost a stigmatizing one. So what are the people actually angry about?
I think the clearly in France, what we see is that anger is about the fact that politics is broken, the idea that it doesn't fix anything anymore. And it's just a kind of game in between the politicians, which the voters are excluded. And it was clearly accelerated in France by what happened last summer with the snap election, a result different from 2 years before, and the same kind of government. Like if the politicians were not taking into account the result of the election. And it goes both to the presidential party, for example. Macron is accused not to hear what the people say when they cast their vote, but also to the opposition in the sense that they didn't change their mind or the way they behave to trying to find a solution, maybe trying to build a coalition. For example, Mélenchon, the leader of the left alliance, came on the evening of the result to say, okay, now and they didn't have the majority. Now it's all the program and only the program, which is not something really obvious when you don't have by yourself the majority. Yeah. So I think it's about that. I think in many countries it's also about that, but it can take and have some different also situations regarding the political situation of the country.
But then this sounds like this anger is at once directed at elites, at the political system that is broken, that doesn't work. But this type of anger is not always a very much of a feeling that makes people a collective. I mean, they vote, there is an electoral trend, but also that's a reason for a lot of stigmatization. This is also what your data shows.
Yeah, it's clear that it means that the populists, they can use this anger against some part of the population. So in some sense, on the left, on the radical left, you can have this anger used to tackle the rich, the richest. On the far right, it's going to be against the immigrants, the foreigners. It can be in some country against LGBT. Yeah. So it can take very different face, but clearly it means also that everybody is trying to talk only to a part of the society, of the population, and it makes more difficult to have this common language and common message to everybody, to the whole society, to try to stay united. And in some countries it's difficult. One of the issue on that is that when you look at the data, about 50% in many European countries think that the Muslim are a population, a part of the society, which is not the case when we look at other religions, even like Jews. So it's clearly today something that the politicians and the parties have to fix, how to deal with this new population, Muslim population, and which is described and also used by the populist party as some population who are bringing a huge of problems in our societies about crime, about I would say also customs, the way we lived before, which is a bit strange, because for example, if you take a country like France, you have some Muslims for a long time now, and it appeared only at the end of the 80s and especially in the 90s and beginning of 20s, this really anger against this kind of population.
So that would be a sort of analytical data explaining part of the cultural war that we are having.
Yes, it clearly explains that. It's also something which is interesting to notice on that, is that if you look at in many countries, the place where you have the more rejected the place where you have the most voters who are rejecting, for example, the Muslims, is not the place where they are living the more. For example, in France, you will find that much more in the rural area than in the big city center, where you have a bigger part of the population which is coming from migration. So it means that it's not something linked to the personal experience of living. It's much more, as you said, cultural war, and it's really activated by the populist, as they also use in some way today the green policies sometimes to activate this cultural war. They use also the fight for the men-women equality also, by saying that we are going too far, it's too strong on that side. So you really have to fight against that, because clearly it's you need to change the narrative on that, because it's not linked, as I said, to the personal experience only. Of course, you can have some situation where it is, but most of the time it's much more a vision of what's going outside where I live. For example, if we have so many people in the rural area which have speeches against migration, it's because they see in the social media, sometimes on TV, difficulties of the integration of foreign populations, And their only reaction is, I don't want that to come to my place. So I would prefer to vote for people who are saying that they are going to tackle that, because I want to keep my place still protected from that.
But it sounds like the progress is hampered by a lot of prejudice and different phobias, if you want. Since you've hinted that, I have to sort of take my opportunity and ask you, okay, we have anger. We have lots of people who feel very dissatisfied with politics. We have people who stigmatize and are aggressive or ready to be aggressive towards the other groups within the same society. So how from this broken picture can we get a common synthesis, something that social democrats could stand on? Because you said hope is difficult. It seems like an illusion. People are living more and more apart. They base themselves on projection of reality. So where is the breaking point?
I think first of all, it's to remind that it's not new. This idea of a society which is divided, where people are living very differently from a class to another, or an origin to another. What is really interesting in that narrative is that it looks like if in the past the migrants were not living in specific neighborhoods in our cities, it was the case already. So it's not really new. I think we should remind that, and we should discuss about the reality of what is new in that situation and what is not new. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that what we see also in our surveys is that you still have a high level of personal satisfaction in life. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we ask in many European countries, are you satisfied with your life? We measured from 75 to 85% of the population who said they are satisfied with their lives. So we have to break this situation where, and France is a good example of that because it's the worst situation for that, where you have people who say, I'm satisfied with my life, but I'm very unhappy with the society, which probably it's not really possible that it's so different, the situation both, because, I mean, if the society was so in a so difficult situation, people would not be so highly satisfied with their life. So we have to break that. And for that, we have to also talk more about what is unifying us. We have seen in the last years many events where population were unified. I mean, in France, in 2015 with the terrorist attacks,
yes,
we saw huge reaction of unity from the population. Unexpected reaction. We saw that with the Olympic Games last year. We saw that in other countries. We saw also a kind of unity against the policy of the US with Trump, mm-hmm. On Ukraine, even if there is a huge gap between East and Eastern Europe and Western Europe. I mean, but in the public opinion, you still have a population all over Europe who's saying that it's Russia which is responsible of the conflict. We have to support Ukrainian. Of course, we don't want to send soldiers, but we agree to send some weapons and to help them financially. So I think we should also relearn to discuss about what is our common, which is existing. And when we are doing some focus groups and qualitative research, we see that people are still talking about this common issues and this the feeling that they are still are in the same society.
Okay. With that, so what is the aspiration? Because we said this, you said yourself, it's impossible to believe in such a dichotomy. I'm completely dissatisfied with the society, but I'm relatively happy with my life. So what kind of society the citizens would like to see being created? Because it is about the next societal project. Mm.
I think we have a lot of population in our countries who think that what was possible in the past, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, which means that in Europe, for a lot of people who are coming from the society where disadvantages in the society were able to raise by education find better jobs, having a better situation than their parents. This is broken. And this feeling is broken. A lot of people think that now a lot of situations are fixed in the European society. And so we have to really be able to show, because I think it's still possible to raise in European societies, but also to help people coming from the popular classes, for example, to be able to progress and to have a better situation and to break this idea that every child now in Europe will live in a more difficult situation than his parents. So it's possible to have a better life than your parents. And that, I think, is really important. And so all the policies that can help people to be able to get a better situation in the society are important for that. You have two or three, I think, questions depending on the country. Education in country like France is very important. I mean, the education system is not working so well now, and it makes more difficult for people coming from the down of the society to rise. You have in most of the country an issue about housing. Housing is a difficult issue for politicians because it's a long-term issue. It's difficult to take some decisions that will have immediately an effect if you want to take some good decisions. So generally it's out of the debate, but it's a huge problem for many people because of housing it's and problems, it's difficult to move from a place to another, to go to take another job, to be able to have a better career in your professional life also. And the last thing is that, and it's also depending on the country, is the fact that people in Europe are still very attached to the European social model. So it takes different configuration in different countries. But the fact that we have a welfare state in Europe, in most of our countries, but now sometimes they are dissatisfied with this idea that they pay a lot for a system which is not so efficient that it was in the past. So we have to really make it more efficiency, maybe more focused on the main difficult situations, and it's not easy because it's to find a point of a balance between the fact that if you have too generous benefits system, you will activate people who say, okay, it helps too much people who are not working. But we know that it's something very important to help people to pass difficult period and to be able to recover and to take their place in the society.
I think that's a very interesting tension indeed between people in the world of labor and people in the world of labor who vastly depend also on the provision of the public services. But before I bring this fascinating episode to the end, I mean, you hinted to France a couple of times. France has been, as I said at the very beginning in my introductory remark, has been observed with a lot of fascination. How would you see the situation now? You're also a year after the snap elections, which were necessary following the European elections. Lots happened in between, but there's always a fear of how the French political situation will play. We, of course, by default, are going to see some big changes in the French political landscape. I know it's difficult to foretell anything. The reality might change. But what would be your bet when it comes to the developments of the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, I think first of all, the situation is quite blocked now for the next 2 years until the next presidential election. If we don't have an election
sure,
before.
Sure, yes.
But it's blocked because we don't have a majority in the country. We don't see how a new snap election could solve that and fix that. And the problem is that in France now, since 1958, the key election is the presidential election. It's the one who can fix the problem, making a new or president or man or woman, and making him able to get a new majority. So I would suspect that the country is going to stay, not to move a lot since 2 years. The other point is that we are in the middle of a situation. We have two options until the next presidential election. Either we are following the path that we have followed during the last months, and we should see the emerging of a three block political parties or movement in this election, with a populist left around Mélenchon, a populist right around the national rally, and a block of moderates which are divided for the moment, but maybe the voters, because they fear to have to choose between Mélenchon and Le Pen, or Mélenchon and another national rally candidate, we find a kind of leader, and we aggregate around this leader to have a moderate on the second round of the election. One of the problem of that is that it's maybe avoiding to have a populist president in 2027, but it doesn't really fix the situation, because there's no agreement on the policy that must lead the moderates, and there's a risk that they will not be able to solve and to fix things after that. The other solution is that we are going to have the election because of a populist, and so it will break all the political traditional political system, and we will rebuild something on this basis. But of course, I think it would be the worst solution, because clearly, in that case, it's probably going to be a populist far right candidate that will win. And we know that in this period, with with Trump in the US, with some other populists in some European countries, France to go on that side would be a very, very difficult signal for the European Union, and for what the European Union can bring us and help us to for recovering in the next years.
Thank you. That means that we are finishing our conversation with a huge challenge for all the progressive forces, because this is not something that can be taken lightly. And I think everything you've mentioned points out that this is a historical momentum with a lot of lessons, rules of the games changing, but nevertheless, the aspiration, hopes for people, and the trust is still there to be acquired, and one has to find a way to change the trends. Bruno Jambard, Vice President of the Opinion Way, was your guest and my guest in this episode of the FEPS Talks special part of the series for the Progressive Pulses Network. Bruno, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
This series of podcasts is only part of the series of the FEPS Talks. You can find many of them pertaining democracy, socioeconomic dimension, digital, climate, foreign policy, gender equality, and many, many others via our YouTube channel. We wholeheartedly recommend all of them to your attention. We would be incredibly, incredibly grateful if you felt like intervening and leaving your comments behind. Thanks so much, and I do hope to see you online and hear soon from you in the future.